debate. It's a lost art form, especially in regards to soccer during the internet age. This is why the First 11 exists. The First 11 pits pseudo-soccer journalists against each other in a battle for the ages. Here, the week's arbitrarily named top 11 American soccer issues are laid out. Our panelists pick a side and debate ensues. There are no winners. There are no losers. There are no points awarded. There is just reverently irreverent discourse over primarily ridiculous topics that deserve our discussion, or at least rambling opinions of the otherwise ignored. So prepare to be simultaneously amused and aggrieved. This is going to be fast, loose, by the seat of our pants, and we're just going to sort of see where the night takes us. All right, welcome to episode 31 of the First 11 Pod, after a long, long, long hiatus in which Evan got married and had a child, and I went over to Russia, or that's how I think it happened.
Neither of those things happened. I'm going to apologize in advance because I'm so out of practice doing this, and I'm sure Abram is too, that, I don't know, it's like we're going to be like Landon Donovan right after he came back from his sabbatical and just sucked. So, I mean, the difference is that Landon Donovan was good at one point, whereas we were never good. So
we were awesome. There's that. We were awesome.
Are we? I would say that we're like a 7 out of 42. It's not the worst podcast out there, but there are certainly hundreds of millions that are better.
Number one.
Way back when we first started doing this podcast, Evan Reed came on board and told us that it looked like Sacramento was going to be an absolute disaster in USL Pro, and they would never be good. About a week later, he did his piece with the Tower Bridge Battalion, and suddenly, he was feeling a little bit more positive. After Sac Republic has sort of smashed most USL Pro attendance records, has gotten a lot of good publicity, and just recently won the USL Pro Championship, where Evan was sitting next to a whole bunch of people who he can now add to his list of name drops, it appears that Sacramento is lined up to be, quite clearly, in Major League Soccer. However, number one on our First 11, as submitted to us by Matthew Mueller, whose Twitter name I forget, says, would MLS fans be upset with MLS if Garber bypasses Sacramento for an NFL stadium in Minneapolis?
I would say no, they wouldn't be, but only because it's Minneapolis and not... And by the way, there are multiple Minnesota bids. I think that's why Brian Strauss just wrote an article today about saying that Miami and Minneapolis were still the two front runners ahead of Sacramento Republic FC. I think he knows more about it than I do, so I would trust that opinion. But there are more than one possible ownership group. There's the ownership group of Ziggy Wolf, I believe his name is, and the Vikings, who have the stadium that looks like the Jawa sand cruiser thing from Star Wars. Anyway, and they have the Minnesota United group, which I believe has pretty deep pockets. And I don't know if you've been paying attention to NASL lately, but they won the spring season and they're in first place in the fall season. And the combined standings, they are 5 points ahead with one game in hand, which is pretty insane. So you have a really successful – and they're doing their drawing well as well. I mean, it's a pretty successful ownership group there. I think if it was like – honestly, I think if they went to Miami before Sacramento, people would get upset. Because at least Minnesota has like an established fan group, and nothing against Miami, but there's no traction there other than Beckham. It's really just Beckham. Beckham's name, and he wants to do Miami. Yeah, Miami's a big media market, but they have notoriously fickle sports fans. They don't have a downtown stadium location, and there already was a franchise there, although it was in Fort Lauderdale, that failed. So I just really don't understand why that's still a front runner other than Beckham, but I don't know. I mean, I think Sacramento should get a team and deserves a team, but I don't think it would necessarily be wrong to give Minnesota a team first.
Yeah, MLS fans are going to be mad no matter what. That's just sort of what it comes down to. If a team goes to Sacramento, there's too many teams in California. If a team goes to Minneapolis, then we forgot to give it to Sacramento, who clearly grew organically and deserved it. It's a no-win situation, just like every decision Don Garber makes. 50% of the people are going to love it, and 72% of the people are going to hate it. Yes, I know that math doesn't exactly work out, but I don't think that he's going to win either way. Sacramento, do they deserve a team? We could get into that whole discussion of what does it mean to deserve a team. Deserve a team in America is nothing more than having the money to pony up, either the $70 million or the $100 million or the $200 million or the $1 billion that it'll eventually be. whoever is willing to pay the most, that's who's going to get in. I think Minneapolis has a shot. I think Sacramento has a shot. And to be perfectly honest with you, I think MLS would prefer to go to Minneapolis than Sacramento. But are fans going to be mad? Yeah, fans are going to be mad if it goes to Sacramento. Fans are also going to be mad if it goes to Minneapolis.
Yeah, you're probably right.
Number two.
Speaking of teams going everywhere, at the USL Pro Final, I got this really, actually high production value, glossy colored media guide from USL Pro. It's pretty nice. I'll keep this as a keepsake, which confirms several of the 2015 USL Pro expansion teams, right? So confirmed that I have right here on this glossy piece of paper that is in color are the Austin Aztecs, the Charlotte Independents, the Colorado Switchbacks, Louisville City FC, St. Louis FC, and Tulsa Roughnecks. Now, the USL Pro is losing a team, which will take them down to 13. As Orlando is going to MLS, and Charlotte isn't actually necessarily an expansion team. They're sort of just replacing another team that's going to head down to NPSL or PDL or something like that. But they're adding four teams, right? Plus, they're going to add. I know that Real Salt Lake's USL Pro team has been confirmed, the Real Monarchs. I know that Montreal's USL Pro team, FC Montreal, has been confirmed. In addition, there have been talks about Vancouver. There have been talks about Toronto. There have been talks about Seattle. There have been talks from a number of other MLS teams towards expanding to USL Pro. Number two on the first 11 says USL Pro is expanding too fast and has no clear end goal in sight.
I think they do have an end goal. Their end goal is clearly to become, if not the second division, then definitely double A to MLS's single A. I don't know. I'm bad at baseball analogies. But
that's terrible.
Major League Soccer is clearly the top division in America. It's always going to be the top division in America. Sorry, NASL people who think that there's an opportunity for NASL to creep in there. That's just not going to happen. USL Pro has clearly aligned itself with MLS. They are expanding too fast. There is no question about that. And I have a fear that they're going to, I talked about this on Pickup Soccer, that they're going to end up being in that NPSL, USL, PDL model where there are just too many teams and it's a completely regionalized schedule and it's completely disjointed and it makes no sense. But at the end of the day, they do have a clear goal. Their clear goal is to come in and help MLS in smashing NASL, to more or less destroy NASL, to make themselves the only other division, the only way to get into MLS is going to be through USL Pro. So I wouldn't be surprised if in a few years someone like a San Antonio Scorpions who are trying to get into MLS joins USL Pro. Or Minnesota United joins USL Pro to try to get into MLS. I think they're going to be the next clear role in this faux motion event that's going on in MLS right now. There is a clear goal, but I do think that they are expanding too quickly. I think that for the people who are worried about MLS watering down the talent pool, they should be more concerned with what USL Pro is doing, especially since these players are not paid as much to play, and they have to do like five games on a weekend sometimes.
Five games on a weekend. You know, see, there are a couple of things, and that's why I don't think that USL Pro is expanding too fast for a number of reasons. One, there are a ton of guys, and I know two guys made Sacramento Republic FC off of open tryouts. That was Emre Clemente, the starting right back, and Max Alvarez, the starting right midfielder. Both of them were above average USL Pro players. Without Sacramento Republic FC, neither of those guys are playing. And Emre Clemente in particular is a guy who I could see playing in MLS one day. He played fairly all right against Real Salt Lake. He was sort of exposed positionally, but that's nothing to be surprised about given the level of play he played up to. So I think that there is some room and there is talent in the country that is going unnoticed because there just aren't teams there. Second thing, we are getting in USL Pro expansion teams like Louisville. I looked up Louisville. Louisville has like 600,000 people in it. That's pretty big. Also, Dayton, allegedly, we'll talk about this later, is moving to Cincinnati. There are tons of fairly large markets that don't have teams, right? And so I think it would be a mistake for USL Pro to not go after those markets and let NASL get to those markets. We saw what happened with Oklahoma City, where the Oklahoma City USL Pro team kicked the crap out of the NASL team, and the Oklahoma City USL Pro team was a very successful, not not on the field, but off the field, they were very successful this year. So I think it's absolutely the right move for USL Pro. The third thing that I think is that a lot of these teams are going to be MLS reserve teams. The LA Galaxy, too, they weren't successful in terms of people coming to their games. They were one of the last in attendance in the league, but they did a really good job. And there have been a couple great pieces on MLSsoccer.com about them, but they did a really good job of getting minutes for guys like Charlie Rugg, guys like Chandler Hoffman, guys like Bradford Jameson IV, who are going to make impacts but wouldn't be playing otherwise. I mean, any team in MLS has the infrastructure to field a reserve team, and so I don't really even count those necessarily towards the expansion of the league because it's not really adding that much more or taking away that much more money. It's just getting a chance to develop more of the younger players.
But it sort of seems like, it sort of seems to me, and I could be wrong, correct me if I misunderstood you, that you think that the eventual goal is the same thing that I think it is, which is becoming the reserve league. Is that about what you're equating it to?
I think that what would probably end up happening is, say there were, I think, you know what, I could see a USL Pro 1 and a USL Pro 2, because there would be too many teams to, if you had MLS reserve teams and standalone franchises, there would be too many teams to have reserve teams as well as a number of standalone franchises like Cincinnati, like Louisville, that are in large markets. But I could see, you know, maybe having the 26 MLS reserve teams as well as another 20 or so franchises from larger, like mid-sized markets that are getting, they're doing, that aren't, represented on the NASL or USL or MLS level, and having a actual promotion relegation system thing. That wouldn't be really hard to set up at all, and I doubt that the level of play between USL Pro 1 and USL Pro 2 would be that much of a difference. I could actually see something like that happening, and I think that might be the end goal, to be honest.
That would be interesting, especially since many people's heads would explode if USL Pro went to a promotion relegation system that didn't eventually land teams in MLS.
I don't know. I think it would be good. I think that would be exciting, and it would put a lot of incentive towards the reserve teams to win, because you would want your players developing in the second or third division rather than the third or fourth division.
Yeah, but it would also, you know, then I guess USSF then sells it as, oh, we're trying this out for MLS, even though we know that's a big fat lie.
Number three.
Evan talked a few minutes ago about a possible relocation of the Dayton Dutch Lions, saying that they're going to leave Dayton, God bless them, I don't know why anyone would stay in Dayton, to head out to Cincinnati. Number three on our first 11 said, the possibility of the Dayton Dutch Lions relocating to Cincinnati is something.
Well, it certainly is something, and this report has come from wrongsideofthepond.com. And it has listed the report that they are moving. It has listed anonymous sources. So at first I was sort of unsure of the validity of the report, but there is Chad Hollingsworth, who is one of the best and biggest Dayton Dutch Lions fan and also covers the team for the website Reckless Challenge. I've heard through the grapevine that the sources, according to him, the sources are legit, and if he had the same sources, he would have reported the same things. So we'll see what happens towards there. I feel bad for Chad because he does such a good job supporting and covering the team, but this can't be looked at as anything other than a good move. I mean, Cincinnati is a major league sports franchise. I mean, city. They have a baseball team there. They have an NFL team there. Both of those teams are, I believe, somewhat strongly supported. I think that you are seeing these bigger cities, like, again, I mentioned Louisville as well, these cities that are sort of underserved in the sporting market. I mean, they don't have a basketball team, they don't have a hockey team, so other than baseball, there isn't a lot going on in the summer, and I really feel like these cities who have a lot of people could embrace teams like this and become successful and become possible, you know. And before this year, no one was talking about Sacramento as an MLS expansion franchise. Now everyone's talking about Sacramento, and no one would have expected it. These are decently sized markets, which only have one or two professional sports teams. I think that USL Pro teams could be very successful in places like that rather than a smaller town like Dayton.
See, and Dayton is, I think the city itself, I was trying to find the numbers, is 140,000 to 150,000. Metro area is, I think, just south of 1 million, which is not a huge city size. I'm still not for this. I'm still very anti this. I don't believe in moving teams. I believe in properly marketing your teams. I remember talking to someone when I was dealing with, not with Pensacola, with the Pensacola City FC, but with some of the other people that were surrounding that situation that came through to sort of help some of the players out. There's a lot of teams in USL Pro, and you have covered it more than I ever did, that sort of run it like a minor league franchise. And not minor league in the sense of they're not the major league team, but in sense of, hey, we got 200 people out, let's be happy. Dayton, I know he said, was like that. And that there's one other one, which I can't believe, I'm blanking on who the other one was, who we sort of threw under the bus. But the idea of these teams running themselves unlike anything professional, not doing what Sacramento does, not trying to do what Orlando does, not even doing what Harrisburg does. I think that's sort of where Dayton falls. Dayton is not a tiny city. Is it a small metro? Yes. Is it a small city? Yes. Is it a tiny city? No. There are smaller cities who draw better, who do better. I don't believe in moving teams. I believe in improving on the product you have. Otherwise, just fold your team and have someone else get the rights. I don't think any team in any league, baseball, basketball, football, soccer, lacrosse, field hockey, rugby, whatever, should be moving. I think that's a terrible precedent to set for your supporters. I think it's a terrible precedent to set for professional teams, even if that professional level is only the third division.
Number four.
Staying in the lower division, made headlines earlier this week. I believe the report originated from ESPN SC, although it could have been SI.com. I can't remember which one, although it was reported on soccer by Ivis.com. The Minnesota United FC's Miguel Ibarra, he's a attacking midfielder slash forward. He can play a couple of different positions, I believe, has been called up to the U.S. national team, making him the first player from lower division soccer to be called in since it was either 2005 when there was a player strike in a bunch of lower division for U.S. soccer. There's a player strike in a bunch of, or at least there was no collective bargaining agreement signed, and a bunch of lower division players got called in. And then after the strike was, or situation was resolved, Clyde Sims stayed in the camp with the U.S. team in 2005. So that's the first player in 9 years to be called up to the U.S. national team. Number four on the first 11 says Miguel Ibarra's call up to the national team says more about the state of NASL than the state of the U.S. national team.
Yeah, and I was trying to argue this point with you before we started recording, which is I'm not really sure what this says more about. There's talent in NASL. I will admit that there is talent in NASL. The talent is a little more distributed. The talent is more spread out. Let's go with that. We've got further spread out talent than we do in maybe MLS, where the talent is also very diluted and spread out. I'm not sure what this says about who or if it says anything about anyone. I want to see, does he make a game day 18? Does he make a final roster? Is this the only call-up? Does he actually get called up? Because we still haven't seen this roster yet. I think it's pretty certain that he'll at least be called into the camp. And from what I've seen, and I've seen video highlights of him, he looks like a decent player, but he doesn't look like someone who's done anything that I haven't seen 100 other MLS players do. Just he's doing it, and it looks a little more impressive because some of the defenders in NASL, not all of them, but some of the defenders just aren't quite on the level and just aren't quite on his level. More likely than not, he's going to end up in MLS, and that's a whole nother argument to put out there. But I'm not sure this really says anything about the state of NASL or about the state of the national team. I think it's just a cool kind of story. I think it's good for NASL. Since we always say things are good for MLS, let's say something's good for NASL. I hope to see more NASL players getting a shot. I'm just nervous that players are going to get called. I'm not sure what I'm nervous about. I'm not sure what this story means, if it really necessarily means anything.
You know, I'm not sure either, to be honest. And it came out, actually, according to Big Apple Soccer a couple hours ago, that the New York Red Bulls had filed a discovery claim on Ibarra. Although, they discovered him. Yeah, that's a real thing. Anyway, and we'll see if discovery claims are even a thing in the new collective bargaining agreement or a possible 2 to 3 year MLS strike. Those things are still a thing. But, I mean, I do think he'll end up in MLS, but I'm wondering, I think it says more about the national team in that Jurgen Klinsmann is at the start of a four-year cycle, and he's looking for players who might not necessarily be able to contribute now, but might be able to contribute later. Obviously, he sees Ibarra as someone who's promising, but not necessarily a finished product, just like when he called up the kid Morris from Stanford. But he, I mean, you saw Klinsmann, the way he wanted to put youth on. I mean, he put DeAndre Yedlin played major World Cup minutes. John Anthony Brooks played one half in the World Cup. I mean, these were young, somewhat untested players that he's not afraid to call in. And you wouldn't be surprised if a player like this made the World Cup roster next year. I mean, we've seen it all. We've seen players go from NASL and seemingly into MLS a few times recently, most notably with Luke Mulholland this year and a couple years ago, Johnny Steele. I mean, like, there are cases of success stories. It's just that this guy is a little bit younger and he could possibly contribute to the national team in the future. I don't think it's a now thing. That being said, NASL is, I think, much better, not much better, but better than USL Pro, whereas the MLS is still much better than NASL. And I think that NASL, from where it stands right now, that the Minnesota United could possibly contend for a playoff spot in the Eastern Conference of MLS, but not in the Western Conference. I would put them sort of anywhere from the 10th to 16th ranked team in MLS in terms of talent and in terms of where it is. And it's the same with USL Pro. Like, Sacramento Republic would be mid to lower table in NASL. I mean, there is a gap in the division, but I just think it says more about our national team and the future of our national team that you're getting a guy who could be in a bigger league in a couple years to come up to the national team so he gets experience.
So what you're saying is that NASL is better than MLS?
No, that's not what I heard.
That's what I heard. Sorry, that's all I heard. That's all I heard. NASL is going to compete with MLS. That's what I heard. We are heading into our break. When we come back, it's pretty much going to be all MLS. Talking MVP, SKC, MLS Cup, and of course, Chivas USA. All that and more when we come back to the First 11. I can't afford to not record, so I call my nigga Crisis, tell him hit the boards. Then I call Tay, put the pedal to the floor. Before we do the shop, gotta stop by the store. I'm on my knees, gotta go to the Lord. Dear Father, I pray to you these things ain't gonna pay for it. All them times that I win, ignored. So what, it wasn't 20, but still I scored. My heart still scorned and my mind is focused. So this serves as a warning to protest. Any verse dispersed is sicker than the first. And I'm on a little chap, chap, chap. I'm on a little chap and all of these nerds. You can find the Rebel Alliance podcast on the internet, iTunes, or Stitcher Radio. Es una trampa. Part of the All-American Soccer Podcast Network.
The Rebel Alliance podcast. Oh no, it's a trap! It's put yourself between a bullet and a target. And it won't be long before you're pulling yourself away. What you done here is put yourself between a bullet and a target.
Welcome back to the First 11, where we are putting the training wheels back on and trying to figure out how we do this thing again.
Number 5.
So it was reported by ESPN that Chivas USA will most likely go on hiatus at least for the 2015 season, if not for the 2015 and 2016 season. Yesterday, it was reported by Grant Wall that we could see some interesting new ownership coming in to take over that team, either in 2016 or 2017. However, when Chivas USA comes back from their hiatus, they will more likely than not go by a new name. We're looking most likely at something like LA City or LA Football Club or LA something else stupid and European. Number 5 on our First 11 says, can't we all just admit that Chivas USA isn't going on hiatus, but rather they are contracting?
So I first want to say that I feel awful for the Black Army, 1850, and their President Angel Mendoza. They've had a very good attitude about this whole thing. They're actually going to be, as long as Chivas USA or LA Team 2 is not a franchise, they are going to go to Galaxy home games and root against the Galaxy, which I think is kind of awesome. I feel terrible for them. They're an excellent supporter group, a great group of guys, and it just kind of sucks that this has to happen to them and that they've dealt with 10 straight years of complete and utter incompetence from the bigot Jorge Vergara and the terrible managers who have come in and done an awful job. and I feel awful for them because of that. That being said, Chivas USA is going to play its last game in October. Then the team isn't going to exist anymore. 2 years later, a new team, probably at a new site with a new name and different colors, is going to come into the league. This is nothing other than the team getting the team folding and then being reborn as something else. This last year, just in USL Pro, I can't remember that it was Arizona something.
United
folded, and it was it's Arizona United now, but before it was something Phoenix FC or something like that. They folded, and then a new team came back, and it was an expansion team. It wasn't the same team. It wasn't the same players. It wasn't the same colors. It was a completely new team. The team is not rebranding. The team is going away, and then a new team is coming back.
Yeah, it seems like this is a shrewd-ish media move by MLS to call this not contraction, to call it every other word other than contraction, because this is clearly contraction, and it is clearly a failure on the part of MLS, but they're selling it as far as, oh, well, we made $30 million profit on this, or we're going to get a great new team in LA, or we're going to get insane foreign Malaysian owners in MLS, or one of 100 other things. But I think they do need to understand that on some level, even if that level does net you $70 million, $30 million, whatever the gross net income ends up being, this is a failure. This is no different than Tampa and Miami being contracted. Chivas USA was contracted. Call it what it is. It is what it is. There's no other way to look at it unless you want to try to come up with a new fancy word to say it when you're releasing your press release. But it's a contraction. I wish they would just say that.
They need to come back as the LA Riot, because you'll have an existing fan base, players that you can sign, as well as some celebrities involved with the team. I'm talking about big names like Diego Luna and Alfred Molina.
Not to mention a sweet show. Jersey. And a sweet jersey.
What?
Sweet jersey.
Oh, yeah. Just go red. I don't know. I don't really have anything else to say about that, actually. Matador, great show. If you're not watching, then I don't know what you're doing with your life.
Number six.
The LA Galaxy of Los Angeles, California, are far and away the hottest team in MLS. They've won some ridiculous amount of the last some other number of their games. Right now they are sitting with 57 points, which I believe is how many the New York Red Bulls won the Supporters Shield with last year. Despite having four more games to play, they're averaging 1.9 points per game. Their goal differential is plus 32. That's an insane number. And the crazy thing is, they're not even in first place right now, as Seattle Sounders are also have 57 points, but have the first tiebreaker, which is wins. Number six on the first 11 says that LA is the clear favorite for the Supporters Shield, MLS Cup, and it would be a shock to not see them win both. And keep in mind that over the last 2 weeks of the season, we have a treat for us as MLS fans, as LA will play Seattle at home, and then LA will travel to Seattle the next weekend to play. So we have a pretty exciting end to our season. So, yes, Abram, agree or disagree?
All right, I was going to agree with it based on how it was written, but you changed the wording of it ever so slightly at the end. So I'm going to have to disagree. I think they'll win one of them. I don't think they're going to win both of them. Let me just say, and I'm not sure this one's still on there, we'll probably have to get rid of it, but this is probably one of the best, not the best, but one of the best MLS teams in league history. They just are. The way they play together, the way they move, the way that they've been able to shift around Robbie Rogers and get the most out of him, the way they've been able to figure out what to do with Zardes eventually, the way that Donovan has been, playing after his, really crappy summer, to put it mildly. The team is coming together at the right time. I think that they could hoist one or the other. I don't think they're going to get both. I think Seattle will get one of the two. I do think at the end of the day it's going to come down to Seattle getting one, LA getting the other. I just don't know which is which. I think the best case scenario for MLS would be Seattle win the Supporters Shield, LA win MLS Cup. And I think the best case is that they somehow reformat the playoffs before any of that happens so they can get LA versus Seattle as the final game. But we all know that's not going to happen. Or is it? but I can't really see LA winning both. I don't think Seattle is playing poorly right now. I think that the points are equal. Who did they just lost this last weekend, or did they draw? I don't remember.
Seattle?
Yeah.
They beat Chivas 4-2, oh, that's right. But they lost midweek to FC Dallas 3-1.
I knew they had lost one recently. But they're not losing to bad teams. I don't think LA is losing to bad teams. It could very well come down to those last two. Actually, it will absolutely come down to those last two games of the season as far as Supporters Shield. And it is an absolute toss-up, even with LA having that plus 32 goal differential.
So, LA, yeah, the plus 32 goal differential is absolutely insane. And the thing is, it's crazy. LA Galaxy have scored 63 goals. Seattle Sounders actually have a really strong offense as well. They've only scored six fewer goals than the LA Galaxy, which is, again, far and away the second most in the league. Problem with Seattle Sounders FC is that they've allowed 46 goals, which is more than LA in second place, more than DC in third place, more than Real Salt Lake in fourth place, more than FC Dallas in fifth place, more than New England Revolution in sixth place, more than Soaring Kansas City in seventh place, more than the Columbus Crew in the eighth place, and the same as New York Red Bulls in ninth place. Their defensive record is honestly not that good. Obviously, they've had a few injuries with their center backs, and they haven't been playing well, but I believe since like July or something like that, Chivas USA has only scored four goals, and all four of those goals came against Seattle. Seattle is just not doing very well defensively right now. And what happens when the goals dry up? Yes, Clint Dempsey and Obafemi Martins are just playing incredible soccer right now, out of their minds. But LA Galaxy is just as strong offensively. The difference is that the back line that LA Galaxy has, particularly Omar Gonzalez, AJ De La Garza, and Robbie Rogers at left back, is playing very, very, very well. LA Galaxy have an advantage defensively. They have an advantage in goal. Jaime Pinedo is much stronger than Stefan Fry. And they're a wash offensively. I honestly think, I mean, it's clearly going to come down to the last two games of the season. And with all of the publicity surrounding Landon Donovan and the fact that he might be the first player in 10 or so years to go, or no, the only second player ever to go over 20 assists, the fact that he's on his farewell tour, I just think that it's too perfect of a story to say that, to not say that they're going to win both trophies. I mean, I really honestly can't see anyone beating LA Galaxy right now. I think LA Galaxy can absolutely knock off Seattle and Seattle in the last game and guarantee themselves home field advantage and have MLS Cup in LA and have it be sort of a farewell tour for Landon Donovan to have his last game be a winning MLS Cup. It'll be just like what happened with David Beckham.
It's going to be fascinating watching it down the stretch, because I think we both agree that no matter who comes out of the East, they're playing to be the MLS Cup runner-up. DC, Kansas City, who we're about to talk about, New England, any one of those three, and possibly someone else could get hot and go through, but I don't think either of them is beating either Seattle or LA, or really Real Salt Lake for that matter. I'm just not sure I can see LA winning both. You bring it up as the idea of being the farewell tour. I bring it up as the idea of there being a hell of a lot of pressure on that team to perform throughout the playoffs and down the stretch. And I'm not sure, especially since they're sort of relying on Zardes a lot more than I ever figured they would, that he's going to be able to shoulder that load for them.
Well, no, it's easy for Zardes. Zardes is, if you look, I just saw the compilation of Zardes' finishes. Almost all of them are one touches because he gets setups on platter. He gets the so-called the Bradley Wright Phillips treatment, where he has world-class teammates in Landon Donovan and Robbie Keane setting him. I mean, if you're a defense, you're not going to focus on Giazzi Zardes. You're going to focus on Landon Donovan and Robbie Keane. I mean, the LA Galaxy are a really experienced team. You have Robbie Keane, you have Landon Donovan, who have been to multiple, actually Robbie Keane's only been to one World Cup, but who have scored goals in World Cups. Omar Gonzalez has been to the World Cup. Robbie Rogers has been through more adversity than probably almost any other soccer player in U.S. history. AJ De La Garza is a very experienced player. They have Jaime Pinedo in goal, who's played in a number of international tournaments and CONCACAF qualifying for Panama, not to mention their central midfielders of Juninho, who's been around for forever, and Marcelo Sarvis. I mean, the team, really the only inexperienced guy on the team is Giazzi Zardes, and they're not really relying on him at all. Anything that he does is a bonus. So I don't think the team is feeling any pressure. I think that they're having fun, and they have the best coach in MLS and probably U.S. soccer history at the helm. I just don't see how they can lose. I would be very surprised if someone upsets them for either trophy at this point.
Two things. One, when did Jason Christ become the LA Galaxy coach?
Shut up.
And two, I think that as a New England Revolution fan, I'm going to be happy to say that we played Seattle and crushed them 5-0, and then promptly got destroyed by LA 5-0. So maybe I go back on what I say, and LA is going to win everything.
Are you ready for LA to beat New England in the MLS Cup for a third time?
Oh my God, you could shoot me now.
Number 7.
In the last 9 games, Sporting Kansas City has drawn once, won twice, and lost 6 times. They lost 2-0 to Vancouver, 3-0 to DC United, 3-1 to Houston, 3-1 to New England, 2-1 to New York, and most recently, 3-2 to New England again. Sporting Kansas City has not been playing well during this time. Their once mighty, impenetrable Eastern Conference favorite is now looking at third place in the East and possibly falling even lower as they play DC United, Chicago, who don't really count, Philadelphia, and New York Red Bulls going down the stretch. This is the team that was supposed to walk through the Eastern Conference into the final again. Now they're behind DC United, who no one saw coming, and the New England Revolution, who very few people, myself included, saw coming. Number 7 on our first 11 says, no one is afraid of SKC, nor should they be.
Honestly, up until about 5 seconds ago, I was going to agree with that, but they're the defending champions. And what I just thought of is the fact that, yeah, they've been terrible in MLS play, but they've been very good in CONCACAF Champions League play. They're on pace to advance from the group, which is be difficult because I believe they're in the same group as Saprissa. I can't remember if that's actually correct or not, but I think they had a 3-0 home win against Saprissa. They've done well in their other results in the CONCACAF Champions League. I believe they have 7 points for 3 games. Not only that, but they are the defending champions. They have good, experienced players such as Matt Beisler, Graham Zuzi, and they have one of the biggest scoring threats in the league in Dom Dwyer, who has 20 goals, which is 20 goal seasons rarely ever happen in MLS. I don't think there have even been 20 goal seasons in the 19-year history of the league. I mean, they're dangerous up top. They have a solid defense, and they play in front of an incredible crowd. And with the new format, unless they finish fourth in the league, then if they finish fourth, they're going to get a chance to play at home at least once. It's a tough place to go on the road and play, especially with the weather conditions in the winter. I just don't see why they aren't being as respected. Yeah, they've missed a few games here or there, but there are still 4 more games in the league for them to catch fire and for them to get off to a strong start heading into the postseason, where they clearly have tons of experience. They're returning almost the exact same team other than Jimmy Nielsen.
I'm going to go on this based on the last New England game, which I saw. They do not – all right, let's start with the back. Matt Beisler looks terrible. When you are nutmegged on a goal by a central defender, you need to worry. They didn't shut down Jermaine Jones. They absolutely should have shut down Jermaine Jones. You do not give that player that much space on a ball with that much time in the game when you should know that he likes to shoot from there and apparently score from there. It's not like Beisler and Zuzi weren't on the field when he did that in the World Cup against Portugal. They do not look like a good team right now. And I'm saying this after they scored 2 very quick goals in succession against New England and then just sort of shut it down, and were utterly dominated outside of that 1 10-minute stretch. They do not look like a team who is in to win MLS Cup. They barely look like a team that's in it to get home field advantage in the first round of the playoff. They're not as good as DC. I'm willing to bet they're not as good as as good as New England, and if they are as good as New England, then why did New England get all 9 points off of them this season? This is not the same team that won it all last year. Their goalie, is it Grunenbaum? Is Grunenbaum their goalie? I don't even know. But he apparently cannot go to his left. If you watch the
Eric movie, Kronberg.
Grunberg, whatever.
Kronberg.
You know why I don't know? You know why I don't know his name? Because he's terrible at soccer. he can't dive left. 2 goals from distance, from left. 1 of them from a central defender. 1, the Kellen Roll goal, he basically, that I'm not totally sure why that didn't count as an own goal, because he side-thighed it into his own net. I'm not going to say they're not a good team, which I almost slipped and caught myself saying, but they are not a threat for MLS Cup, I say, as they go into the playoffs and completely dominate.
Yeah, of course. And you know why they took all 9 points off of New England took all 9 points off of Kansas City this year?
Because Teal Bunbury's a beast.
Yep. All right.
And by the way, that was a complete joke. Teal Dunbury is terrible.
He only needs like 7 more goals so you have to eat a dozen Dunkin' Donuts, though.
No, he only needs 6. That's right, first 11. I bet somebody, but I didn't even bet with stakes. I just said I would do it. If he scored 10 goals this season, I would eat a dozen Dunkin' Donuts on the Pickup Soccer, which is a great and awful show. And you know what? He only has 4 goals, and he has 4 more games to score 6.
But he is playing as a winger, to be fair, and his defense has been impeccable.
Well, great. I love it when my forwards are good at defense.
Not a forward anymore. And,
well, my point is that he doesn't have Thierry Henry setting him up for tap-ins.
Number 8.
Speaking of Thierry Henry setting up people for tap-ins, Bradley Wright Phillips is currently leading the Golden Boot chase. He has 24 goals and 1 assist. And, sorry, 24 goals in 28 games. 6 of those goals are penalties. Approximately 35 of those other goals are tap-ins. I believe Ben Jada tweeted out the amount of big chances or whatever that he has finished is somewhere around like 18 and where you're expected to finish. Meanwhile, Robbie Keane is about to have the first 15-15 season in MLS. That's 15 goals, 15 assists since 2001 when Diego Serna did it. He has 17 goals and 14 assists right now. Obafemi Martin says 15 goals, 10 assists for first place Seattle. Lee Wynn seems to be scoring every other game for New England Revolution. And Bobby Boswell has turned around a backline that was completely awful last year. It is one of the best backlines in the league, and as DC United is leading the Eastern Conference. Number 8 on the first 11 says anyone voting for Bradley Wright Phillips for MVP should have their vote revoked.
They should never be allowed to vote for anything soccer-related again. If you want to vote for a New York player who helped get BWP those goals, you vote for Thierry Henry. I'm perfectly okay with Thierry Henry being the MVP. I can buy that. I can get behind that. I can agree with it. The whole goals equals MVP thing, I do not agree with. I know there's been several large soccer media personalities who have come up and say, you know, MVP goals. That's what you need. You need goals to be MVP. And I'm not even going to go as far as Lee Wynn, but you said probably my 2 most realistic candidates, Robbie Keane, Obafemi Martins, goals and assists on much better teams. I don't see it with Bradley Wright Phillips. I'm not as impressed. And maybe I would be more impressed with him if over the last few years, Kenny Cooper and Luke Rogers didn't do similar things, granted not to that same number, but didn't have their numbers inflated by playing next to Thierry Henry. Bradley Wright Phillips shouldn't be punished because of the caliber of players who scored a shit ton of goals next to Thierry Henry. But at the end of the day, we do have to take that into account. We do have to understand that, and we do have to see that Thierry Henry is a much more valuable player for New York than Bradley Wright Phillips is for the league. Will he probably end up in one of the final 3 MVP spots? Yes. Should he win that? No. I don't even think he should be in that final 3 spot. I'm going to be very interested to see how this plays out because I honestly did not consider him even as an MVP candidate until very recently when a couple of podcasts and a couple of writers have sort of elevated him to that level, which is a level I don't think he belongs at.
I have 3 things to bring up here, and I am going to agree with what you said. Because whatever, I don't feel like selling out that much just to fit the format of the show. The first thing is Bradley Wright Phillips has 1 assist. 1 assist, and he's playing next to one of the best finishers of all time. You know, having 1 assist while playing next to Thierry Henry shows something about your ability as a soccer player. Yes, he may be able to finish, and that's fine. But when you only have 1 assist compared to 24 goals, you clearly don't have a complete understanding of soccer on some level. I mean, I don't understand how, in all the positions that he's gotten in, how he hasn't found a time or place to square the ball to someone across the box to have that person get a tap in. I just don't understand. I've watched a decent amount of New York Red Bulls. He never really impresses you unless he's scoring goals, and most of the time he's getting set up by its teammate. Not that there's anything wrong with that. I think Bradley Wright Phillips is a very good player. I'm okay with him being an all-star. I'm even possibly okay with him being on the best 11. I'm just wondering what most valuable player means, which brings me to my second point. My second point is that if you replace Bradley Wright Phillips with an average player, like a Luke Rogers or something, I don't think the New York Red Bulls would be that much worse. I think that the LA Galaxy, if you replace them with an average, league average player, if you replace Robbie Keane with a league average player, they would be much worse. Right now, they are historically good, whereas New York Red Bulls are okay, and they would be a little bit worse without Bradley Wright Phillips. Without Robbie Keane, LA Galaxy would go from historically good to above average. And I 100% believe that he makes that team, and he makes that team go, and he's the reason why Landon Donovan has 18 assists. He's the reason why Giassi Zardes has like 16 goals or whatever. My third point is, I'm just going to name you some names. 2004, Amado Guevara. 2011, Dwayne De Rosario. 2013, Mike McGee. Oh man, there have to be others as well. But those three stand out to me as just horrendous atrocities of MVP voters. I think that Bradley Wright Phillips is probably going to win the MVP award. I think that the voters are absolutely awful and terrible for choosing people like that. In Dwayne De Rosario and Mike McGee's case, neither of those teams actually made the playoffs. It's just that the guys put up a ton of numbers. How valuable can you be if your team's not making the playoffs? What's the point? You're actually negatively affecting your team if you finish sort of high but don't make the playoffs, because then you don't get a higher draft pick. And 2004 was the worst thing I've ever seen, when Jaime Moreno had 7 goals, 14 assists, led DC United to I believe second place Eastern Conference finish, and while Amado Guevara had 10 goals, 10 assists, 6 of which were penalties, and led New York to like third place, and they didn't end up doing anything. That was the biggest train wreck of MVP voting. And you know what, you guys, those of you who are listening who have MVP votes, don't help us or make us repeat those years. Years of terrible, uninformed MLS media voting.
Yeah, the Dwayne De Rosario and Mike McGee ones really stick out to me, just based on, I think one of the prerequisites for being an MVP should be your team is in the playoffs. The Dwayne De Rosario one was bad. It's not quite as bad because they were, I don't know, they're both bad, whatever.
Let's just leave it at that. How can you be MVP if you're traded twice in the same season?
That's why I was going to say something, but then I had to think about that and take it back. Those are both awful. You can't be MVP if your team doesn't make the playoffs.
Two teams gave up on you and you still won the MVP award. You can't be valuable if two separate teams, albeit one of them was completely incompetent, if two teams say, hey, this guy has value, it's trade value, and then you get traded for, I don't even know, he got traded for, he got traded for...
I don't even remember what Toronto traded him for New York. Oh, for Tony Chani. It was Tony Chani.
They traded him for Tony Chani, and then New York's done
for Dax McCarty. And Dax McCarty is currently more valuable of a player in MLS than is Dwayne De Rosario.
MLS voters... idiots.
MVPs are stupid. All right, so we are moving on. When we come back, we'll be finishing up with more MLS postseason awards, even though the postseason doesn't start for a few more weeks. Sob. All that when we come back on the First 11. Yeah.
Soccer hipsters unite.
From important states like Massachusetts and California to states no one gives a shit about, like New Hampshire and Alabama, a bunch of random guys with varying ratios of fanhood to non-biased journalism gather to talk about soccer, to drink alcoholic beverages, to give each other crap, and most importantly, to wake everyone up to the truth. It's Pick Up Soccer, available on the AASB Network. Chasing haven, should I just keep on?
All right, welcome back from the break. Hopefully we've gotten better as we've gone, and I stutter off the rip, so probably not. Hopefully I've gotten better as we've gone along, and maybe if we ever do this again next week or the week after or whenever, we'll still get back to our regular awesomeness.
Number 9.
New York Red Bull. Oh boy. I don't think most of us even know where to start with them. It sounds like, according to several interviews and articles and anonymous sources that I believe Grant Wall found, Thierry Henry has 0% chance of going back to New York. Also, the Red Bulls have met at least twice with teams trying to buy the Red Bulls, including Manchester City, before Manchester City decided to jump on board and buy their own MLS team. New York's just a hot mess. Or New Jersey is, for that sake. Number 9 on our First 11 says, The shitstorm currently happening with Red Bulls New York is further proof that there should only be one team per media market.
At this point in MLS, I don't know why it makes sense to have two teams in a media market. I mean, it's clear that there isn't a ton of interest right now, at least in a second Los Angeles franchise. There was for a little bit, but I mean, now the Super Clásicos aren't even selling out. We'll see how New York City FC does in Yankee Stadium next year. I mean, the sight lines are going to be fairly awful. According to Ben Jada, there is like adequate support, but I'm wondering if, you know, if you live in New York, there's a sports bar every other, block, and you can watch all the soccer you want. I'm wondering how many people are actually going to go to Yankee Stadium to not see the Yankees, or are going to go out and see a team that's not the Knicks. Or, I mean, I don't even think the Mets sell out. I don't think that, I don't know about the Rangers because hockey's stupid. But, I mean, it just doesn't make that much sense to me. I hope I'm proven wrong, because I think it would be awesome to have a sick New York derby there, and I think it would be great if they can actually get a soccer specific stadium in New York. But I mean, they just got to show it to me. Really, they have to show me that it works right now. And based on the way New York Red Bull's been run over the past couple of years, which has been pretty incompetently, for the history of their franchise, been pretty incompetently. I'm not surprised by the Thierry Henry news at all, and I think it would be hilarious if he trolled them by signing with New York City Football Club next year.
Yeah,
the league minimum.
I feel like Red Bulls New York, and I've made this comment before, is going to turn into Chivas USA. They're going to be Red Bulls USA. They are not going to be anything. You mentioned before, they're already paying more attention, or excuse me, the Red Bull organization is already paying more attention to Leipzig. That's going to continue to happen. They're going to pull out of MLS. They are not going to be around in MLS forever. And part of that has to be with they could not crack that media market. And I really think that New York City FC is in a much better position to crack that media market and become the LA Galaxy of New York. Chivas failed. Who knows what's going to happen when the new LA team enters. One team per market. You don't need two teams. There's not the interest for two teams. There's no reason for it. New York Red Bulls is completely inept. They have one supporter shield. Even the New England Revolution have two trophies.
No, they only have one.
Go fuck yourself.
It's not a real thing.
Superliga international competition.
So, just the only thing is, I did legitimately ask if New York Red Bulls would become Chivas USA on Twitter, and Mark Fishkin, who I believe writes for the Wall Street Journal, just sort of basically called me an idiot, maybe rightfully so, because I don't understand the city of New York that well. I've only been there for 1 week of my life. It was awesome. It was expensive, and you could do anything that you wanted. But they already have a fairly established fan base. Their supporters groups are up there with the top supporters groups in the country. And I mean, they're not going to become Chivas USA. They already have their own stadium. They cater to the New Jersey fan. There is a lot of there are a lot of fans in New Jersey, and there's a lot of soccer history in New Jersey. They're not going to become the Chivas USA of that media market. That being said, I mean, I think right now they'd be around an averagely successful MLS team.
But let me clarify, because I make that comment all the time about them being Chivas USA New York. I don't mean that as far as only 500 fans showing up. I mean that as far as becoming the little brother. As becoming the other team. Oh, there's the Yankees, and then there's the Mets. Oh, there's the Knicks, and there's kind of the Nets. Oh, there's the Giants, and then there's the Jets. I think it'll be, there's New York City FC, and there's also Red Bulls.
It's the other way around, that the Jets are more popular than
Yeah,
Jets.
I thought about that after I said it.
I see what you mean, and I don't think it's going to become that, because I already think it's happened. And, like, I mean, you look at New York City Football Club, they have Frank Lampard, who's scoring goals for Manchester City, and they have David Villa, who was legitimately a starter for Spain a couple of months ago, and not only that, but had been one of the top players in Europe for a long time. I mean, you have legitimate stars who are going to draw fans to the stadium, and New York Red Bulls is getting rid of Thierry Henry and their other guy, Tim Cahill. Tim Cahill's an excellent player, but he hasn't even been playing that well this season, and he's not a draw at the gate. You don't go
to watch Tim Cahill play soccer. You go to watch Thierry Henry play soccer. You go to watch Frank Lampard play soccer. You go to watch David Villa play soccer.
You go to watch Dax McCarty play soccer.
I do. I don't know about you.
And so, Bradley Wright Phillips.
What's that?
Bradley Wright Phillips.
Who?
Number 10.
So about, I believe it was 8 seconds into the Toronto SC Portland game, Portland player Will Johnson suffered a really unfortunate injury. Our thoughts are out there with him. I don't think it will end up affecting his career. They said it was a clean break. He broke his tibia and fibula, and he's not a guy who really relies on pace or attacking moves anyway. He's more of a box-to-box midfielder, good passer. Will Johnson is all-time one of my favorite MLS players to watch. He's really good player. Probably the best player on the Canadian national team and their captain, too, I believe. Number 10 on the first 11 says, Will Johnson's injury, so very TFC.
I agree. I'm not going to agree with it for the same reasons you are, I think, ultimately going to agree with it, just because I don't want to steal your thunder. But as soon as that injury was known, as soon as everything came about, the first person who I went back to thinking of was, of course, Steve Zakuani. Now, I don't think the injury, for various reasons, such as the type of player Will Johnson is going to affect him to the same way that Steve Zakuani's injury, you know, completely destroyed his career. And I wanted to point out something that was written on World Soccer Talk. I don't often promote things that weren't written by you or me when I used to write. But it's called The Sad Tale of Steve Zakuani's Ailing MLS Career. It's by Abe Asher. It is probably the most depressing piece I have read about an MLS player. Just what happened to Zakuani. There were talks of not just, you know, the U.S. national team maybe seeing if they could sneak him under the wire, but there was talk about Steve Zakuani playing in England or playing for the English national team or possibly being sold to England. And we all hoped that when he went to Portland that he as well would revitalize, reinvigorate his career, and it just didn't happen. And I have this horrible feeling that we could potentially see the same thing happen to Will Johnson. That's me knocking on wood. Will Johnson is the best player on Portland. Will Johnson is one of the top three or four central midfielders in MLS. Will Johnson is the best Canadian player maybe ever in MLS. Yeah, I'm looking at you, MVP Dwayne De Rosario. I hope that TFC did not destroy the Canadian national team. And on that note, I'm just going to sort of pass that off to you.
No, I mean, it is obviously very TFC. It would be so TFC to, I mean, Dwayne Rollins at 24th minute called it the biggest win in TFC history. I believe it might have actually been something else, and it probably is the biggest win in TFC history. And the biggest win comes with destroying their national team, the best player on your national team, the captain of your national team. That your national team is just awful. I mean, they lost 8-1 to Honduras. 8-1 to Honduras in a game that they had only to draw to qualify for the last round of CONCACAF qualifying. Last year or the year before, they lost to Mauritania. Mauritania is a team in Western Africa ranked in the low 100s of the FIFA rankings, who didn't even enter World Cup qualification because their infrastructure was so bad. I really feel bad for Will Johnson. I feel bad for Portland Timbers fans, who deserve more than anyone to win it. To win some sort of silverware, but I hope it's not really going to affect his career. I don't think it will. You know, like I said before, he's not relying on speed. He's not relying on stuff, and I think he'll be okay. But I'm just hoping that he can contribute to the team next year. By the time they're in, I believe they're almost a lock to make the CONCACAF Champions League quarterfinals. So get well soon, Will Johnson. We all. Enjoy you and appreciate you as a player.
Number 11.
DC United. What a turnaround they've had. Just when we thought we were done with the worst to first case scenarios, DC United, while not going to win the Supporters' Shield this year by any stretch of the imagination, is in all reality probably going to win the Eastern Conference and go into the playoffs with the number one seed before being destroyed by whoever wins the play-in game. Regardless, perhaps outside of Bill Hamid, who should be goalkeeper of the year, the biggest surprise on that team was when Bobby Boswell came in. When Bobby Boswell was signed, everyone thought, well, we got a slow center back. DC's going to be terrible. Their center backs are going to be eaten for breakfast. They're going to be awful. Meanwhile, DC United has now put up one of the best defenses in the league. And The primary, or the secondary, because I still believe Bill Hamid has played very well this season. The secondary reason behind that is Bobby Boswell, who, I guess if you argue about it, you could say he's helped in the development of Bill Hamid. Number 11 on our first 11 says, he won't get the votes, but Bobby Boswell is a legit MVP candidate.
I absolutely believe he is, because if you look at the back line and who he's playing with, and yeah, Bill Hamid's been excellent this year, but he's been playing with left back. At first, the start of the season, it was left back Christian, who didn't even last half a season in MLS and went back to Spain. And then they brought in Taylor Kemp, who's, I believe, a second-year player who never really got any minutes last year. Next to him, he's playing right now with Steve Brinbaum, who was a high draft pick, but there's a pretty big learning curve for center backs in MLS. There aren't a lot of center backs who step in and perform very well at a high level when they first come in. And right back, Chris Korb, who actually has been mostly Sean Franklin. Sean Franklin's a very good player, but at times it has been Chris Korb as well. And Chris Korb is pretty much the definition of average MLS player. Bobby Boswell has played extremely well. And I know MLS analyst Matt Doyle always points out how good Bobby Boswell is at stepping up and winning balls. Yes, Bobby Boswell is slow, but he's so good at stepping up and intercepting the ball and starting counterattacks very easily for the team. DC United have allowed the second fewest goals in the league with just 34 and 30 games. Bobby Boswell has been the biggest reason for that. And look at the flip side of it. The Houston Dynamo, who came back with almost the same team as last year, except for that they added midseason DeMarcus Beasley. The Houston Dynamo are awful this year. The Houston Dynamo have one of the worst defensive records in the league. In fact, they're one of, it looks like, three or four teams to have allowed 50 or more goals, and the only major difference between them is that they lost Bobby Boswell. When you look at value and you look at Bobby Boswell's contract, I believe he's only on $200,000+ a year. I mean, and then not only that, he's the captain of DC United, the leadership. All that adds up. I wouldn't say the number one MVP candidate, but right now he's my number three.
Yeah, I can't disagree with it, but I want to sort of let's play a little trivia game, Evan. When is the last time a primarily defensive, we'll go that way, player was an MLS MVP finalist?
MVP finalist?
Finalist. One of the three, one of the big three, or however you want to call it.
So you're looking up right now. I have a couple guesses. I know that Tony Meola obviously won the award in the year 2000.
Yeah, that was the last and only defensive
time, really?
Player.
Lubos Kubik never got nominated.
Who? I didn't hear you.
Lubos Kubik.
No, never.
Lubos Kubik.
Never.
Oh, okay, so
not even nominated.
So yeah.
So you got Charlery Joseph in 2009
when he was playing forward.
Probably, definitely as a primarily defensive player. Before that, you have to go back all the way to 2001 for Jeff Agus, who is the only MLS defender, primarily defender, to be nominated for an MVP award. We've never had a defender win it. We've only had one defender ever nominated and two goalkeepers ever nominated in Joe Cannon in 2004 and Tony Meola, who won it in 2000. He won't get the votes. Does he deserve it? Probably. But if we are really going to ever give a defender an MVP or give defenders real shot at an MVP award, then we probably won't have a Defender of the Year award.
Yeah, and I mean, that's why the Defender of the Year award is there. And if Bobby Boswell doesn't win it, I mean, I know a lot of people want to vote for Chad Marshall, but look, Seattle Sounders have allowed 46 goals. That's we just talked about this. You got to vote for Bobby Boswell. He's far and away the Defender of the Year.
All right, so on that note, Evan is writing for about 100 different sites, so I'm sure he's got something to plug.
I'm only writing for Soccer by Ivis now. I am obviously the Davis Enterprise, but Sac Republic SC season is over, so I'm not doing any – I mean, I'm doing local high school stuff, but I'm not going to plug that because it has absolutely no relevance on a national level. So I'll probably do another story on Jaleel this year, maybe. I had one about Quincy a long time ago, but Quincy Ameriquois. But this weekend I'll be at the Earthquakes game working on the clock for Soccer by Ivis. The Earthquakes versus Portland, really important game. Earthquakes suck, but they always seem to get points from Portland, and Portland really needs points to get back in the playoff race. So that's where I'll be.
And I got nothing to plug because I don't do shit except for, do nothing. All right, so... go ahead and follow Evan. He's at Evan Ream. Go ahead and follow me. I'm at Mind of Abram. Go ahead and follow the show. It's at First 11 Pod. Go ahead and follow the network. It's at VAASP. Go ahead and read Evan's work on SoccerByEyes. You know, I really don't know if that's a .com or a .net. I guess it really doesn't matter because anyone who knows anything about soccer knows what SoccerByEyes is. This has been
.net.
Oh, there you go. This has been episode 30-something, or rather 31 of the First 11 Podcast, and we're sorry.